We're here for episode one, Kulfman, and I think anyone who knows me would know that this is probably the podcast I've always wanted to be involved with and have never had the opportunity, so talking tennis. So firstly, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, Josh. Yeah, my man. Look, when we first met each other there, probably about 6 months ago, amazing at your passion for the game of tennis. Not only that, though, but the knowledge that you threw my way, you know, and since then, this was something that I just thought made sense. You know, two guys talking tennis. Not much out there, really. You know, I don't really think sort of in the tennis space. A lot of other sports that are going on. We're both fans of you know, other sports and other podcasts. But this made total sense. It's going to be fun, and it's not going to be boring. That's for sure. There's some major topics out there that need to be spoken about. And don't worry, I'm not too shy to talk about them.
Very good. And that probably is the thing about a lot of tennis content that doesn't appeal to me maybe the way that something like NBA content does, that it is very much down that lineage of tennis is a serious sport. It's a gentleman's game for you know, to use an antiquated term. And a lot of the podcasts present the sport in that way. And we're not going to be going crazy. Look, this isn't going to be clown material. Like, it's not the, you know, the Nick Kyrgios fan podcast. Although I think he's one of the great commentators. I probably should put that out there. But I think that we are going to try and find a balance between breaking the game down technically, which I think happens maybe too much.
Yep.
While still trying to keep some excitement around the game. But I'm not sure there are a lot of shows out there that maybe fall too much into the I'm going to break down A to B and, you know, how they're hitting the ball on the court to a point where it's almost sleep material.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Oh, there's stuff out there. I mean, you're just watching, you know, watching stuff from the main tour, you know, the big matches. There's some great storylines out there in terms of, you know, rivalries, new matchup, younger generation coming through, the older generation. You know, Novak once again flexing his muscles this week in Monte Carlo. He's been, you know, a bit of a break after, you know, after Indian Wells. We'll get into that here in a little bit. But, you know, right back to what he knows to do. You know, took down Massetti overnight, who's, you know, let's be honest, he's one of the better clay quarters in the world.
Yeah.
Regulation win, really. When you look at the scoreline for Novak, he's all business. That's impressive because it's like, you talk about motivation, you talk about athletes, you know, this guy right now, I think the only thing that's going to stop him moving forward is what we're seeing with Rafa right now, what we saw with Roger. And that's just, you know, eventually the body gives way. But he's still finding a way. Obviously, yeah, we talked about this the other week, a bit of a reduced schedule now. Only obviously going to play the big events. But, like, he's come in ready to go. And, you know, that's the kind of storyline that I like to see every time he steps out on court now is can he continue to, when he's at his best, is it still good enough against these younger guys? So that kind of stuff. It's not going to be boring, that's for sure.
No, and you and I have spoken before about how Novak has managed to rejuvenate not just his body over and over and over again, where he's still in as good a condition, particularly this week on the clay. He looks like he's in as good a nick as he has been in a couple of years. How he mentally keeps getting up. Like every week he's breaking some record you didn't know existed, but half the time he's just completely blowing these things, records out of the water. Like, how does he keep motivating himself to take on yet another generation? And particularly in this case, this generation's as talented or more talented than probably anyone he's faced since, you know, your Rafas and your Federers. So you being, I'm going to be leading on you very much as the expert of the mental side because you are an accomplished tennis player, Kulfy. How do you think he keeps getting up and keeps bringing himself back to that peak level?
Well, it comes down to, you know, one of the facts are, you know, as you get older, obviously, and playing on the main tour, the elite level tour, week in, week out, it's tough. And when we talk about week in, week out, he's been doing that every year for 20 years. When you're getting, it's crazy numbers, when you're getting into, you know, Federer was the same before he bowed out. You know, the knee eventually gave way, too many surgeries, and just couldn't keep doing it week in, week out. Andy Murray's, he's like having his third time really coming back. You know, he's finding that out. He's probably done at the end of this year. Nadal, we still haven't seen him. He loves the clay court season, pulled out of Monte Carlo this week. I think today, speaking about, hey, I want to be ready for Barcelona, but can't give us a guarantee he's going to be ready for that event. So when you reach that level of athlete, it starts to become really a month-to-month basis and a week-to-week basis. I don't think Novak's there yet, but you can tell that Yeah, definitely after Indian Wells, he didn't not even bother playing Miami, where previously he would have gone, oh no, I'm playing Miami because I'm hungry and that was a bad result for me. I don't want to sit on that. That churns in their stomach.
Yeah.
Didn't bother. So then you wonder, like, okay, how's he going to go once he comes back for the clay court season, which, you know, doesn't get any easier. These long matches, these grinding matches. But as you can see, he freshened up the mind, freshened up the body. As you said, he looked sharp and physically, and he's tearing guys apart this week on the dirt.
Obviously, there was also a coaching change happening in the background, which we don't have to go too into. But his rejuvenation does seem to fall in line with whatever run he has with different coaches. Maybe he fades away or comes to an end, or he's less receptive. And then he has to do a coaching change to re-engage the brain.
Yeah. Freshening up, definitely a coaching change. You know, for some players, it does that. I mean, we see, like, let's not get into too much detail now, but we see, like, you know, players changing coaches like underwear. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some of those younger guys. You know, but he'd been with Ivan Isvic now for quite some time, and maybe he needed a little bit of a circuit breaker. He probably thought, like, you know, just feeling like he needed to tweak something, whether that's, you know, good or bad, it needed to happen because complacency can set in, wanting some fresh ideas, or maybe just wanting some space just to be, you know, just to get his thoughts together.
Mm.
But when you've been on tour and had the success that he's had for so long, when you get those feelings in the stomach, like, I need to do this, you back your intuition because you've got the runs on the board and you've got the confidence that your decisions will be right. He's done that. And as you can see, you know, being on the clay may freshen him up a little bit. I know it's kind of, you know, the listeners out there probably think, like, well, clay, it's the toughest surface out there, the longest matches.
It's brutal. Yeah.
And on the clay courts too, Josh, you know, there's more guys out there, European guys, more of the younger guys, where he's probably a little bit more vulnerable on the clay courts than he would be on a hard court. You know, let's say, for example, a Musetti, a lot tougher to play on the clay than he is on a hard court. You know, going, you know, playing Novak on a hard court, you know, in America, for example, or in Australia, you know, you're probably looking at, you know, he's a 90% chance to win that match, 10% for Musetti, where, you know, you're getting into the 50-50, 60-40 range on the clay.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really interesting, but it just shows you the level that this guy is at, his base level. His base level is still, it's still right there with the Sinner right now and with Alcaraz when he's at his very, very best. Now, yeah, Alcaraz, another injury. We'll talk about that here soon. But, you know, he's a player where, you know, Alcaraz winning Indian Wells, he took out Sinner in the semifinals there. Once he finds that he's able to maintain that performance and that level, fans will stop being so frustrated. It's a week-to-week thing for him. If he's playing his very best, he's winning the title, Alcaraz. He's shown that. Mm. He's just not playing his very best every week, week in, week out. Sinner's reached that level now where since Australia, since winning the Australian Open, well, you look at his numbers, you know, he's making semis and he's making finals now each week, or he's winning the title. That's his status. That's his level. He's creating that base level. Novak, his base level is each week. It's final or it's win. And if he doesn't do that, he's got to tweak something to go, hey, look, that's his performance. That's his standards. When you've got standards like that, you've reached a serious level.
And we're talking about a guy that, for the first time in a long time, didn't win the Australian Open and didn't go to America. I mean, he hasn't been able to, but when he was able to several years ago, was either competitive or winning some of those tournaments. Like, that's the level that he's at, that it's actually a news story that he didn't win something. When for 99% of the tour, over the whole tour's existence, making it to a semi is, that's a lot of people's career highlight. And we're talking about him not winning as being not a failure, but the expectation is that he's going there to win and there's no other option. He's not trying to get in form or get to the semis.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we know, when you reach that level where it's, you know, unless you're winning the title or you're winning that slam, you know, it's considered a failure. You know, that's some serious pressure. You know, and guys like the Nadals, Federers, and now Novak, who, you know, still playing at that level, that's something that only they understand. And for these younger guys that are coming through right now, you know, that's something that they probably, you just cannot wrap your head around that kind of pressure or those kind of standards of performance that you expect of yourself. And that comes with, you know, the correct diet, the gym, the discipline, the things that the average fan, the armchair fan doesn't see. And when you're getting Novak in events such as Indian Wells, where, you know, the first couple of rounds where he's losing a set here and, you know, he's grinding out a 6-4 in the third win, something's not right. And you can see the difference as he comes into, you know, Monte Carlo this week. We're not seeing that.
Yeah. And you brought up Sinner and Alcaraz's. They're obviously the two real talents amongst the younger generation. Sinner's on his way to being number one in the world, most likely, before the end of the year, unless Novak, A, plays better, but also because he's got a lot of points to defend this year.
Yep.
And Sinner doesn't have quite so much. Those two have a similar game style in terms of power. Like, I've never seen anyone hit the ball as hard on the regular as Alcaraz and Sinner, particularly at that age. Why do you think what is it about their games that's making their bodies react so differently to how hard they're pushing themselves? I've only ever seen it from Del Potro and maybe Stan Wawrinka and people where they're effortless. Like, they're effortless in getting to those kind of ball speeds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Nadal, obviously, just massive ball speeds. But they're really hammering themselves to do it. What do you think it is about those two that's different because Sinner's holding up and Alcaraz isn't?
Yeah, it's interesting, the injury one. You know, Sinner, you know, from this year onwards, you know, especially this year, you know, no break so far. You know, won 7 matches in Australia, you know, backed up, you know, in Indian Wells, Miami, playing again this week. You know, no breaks. So I find that interesting. And no breaks because he's winning matches. You know, he's winning 4 or 5 matches a week. You know, I think he lost in the semis there at Indian Wells, won Miami, backing up again this week. You know, that's a sure sign that, you know, he's found his niche, for lack of a better word. He's found his mojo in terms of being in the gym, recovery, you know, and you build confidence by winning matches. It's simple as that. Alcaraz, interesting, as you said, out again this week due to, it's been reported, an injury. Our discussion was more around the, you know, I look at these things and go, an athlete like Alcaraz, you know, the way, you know, his build and his body type, you know, 5'11", probably 6 foot, explosive athlete. You see this guy and you go, how could this guy be, you know, not go through a couple of weeks and you know, have a niggle and be injured? Like, he's 20 years of age, in incredible condition. I look at it with some of these teams out there where I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, a little bit of foxing maybe going on out there. Like, coming up to the French Open, middle of the year, you know, I don't always think that there's a problem. But if there is, it's really something that they need to look at, his team, because it's concerning. Really is.
It's funny you bring that up with the gamesmanship, not just from players, but from the team as well, because they're all media personalities now beyond the players. And I remember a mutual acquaintance of ours, who's a bit of a tennis tactical expert, told me that the 2019 Rafa run through the Australian Open, the optics were he was in unbeatable form. He was brutalizing everybody. But, well, there was people behind the scenes saying, oh, his game isn't quite at the level people think it is. And then we saw Novak gave him one of the great beatings of all time in that final. Like, they looked like they were from two different ends of the draw. Oh, sorry, the seeding, I should say.
Yeah.
Like, yep. Maybe it might be the greatest game Novak's ever played. Yep. That probably helps. But
yep.
I think he only made 5 unforced errors for 2 sets.
Mm. Mm.
But there's a little bit of, like, the camp around Nadal then was, he's in as good a form as he's ever been. He's fully healthy. He's playing so well. And it created, whether he had any intention or not to do that, a bit of a narrative about his form. And it wasn't quite at that level.
Yes.
So the opposite can happen too. You can put doubt into people's heads about your health and then come out. And Novak's team has done it in the past. How bad were those injuries at the Australian Open? Like, they did a scan. There was clearly an injury, but not enough to debilitate him. But that would have been in his opponent's heads that, oh, I don't have to play as well because I'm not playing Novak today. I'm playing crippled Novak, for the lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think it helped him win some of those matches.
Yeah, I'm all for that. If teams want to put that out there and, you know, and so put a bit of tape on the knee or, you know, the calf or that kind of stuff.
Bit of tape up the side, under the shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, that's up to the individual. That's up to the player. That's up to the athlete to go, well, you know what? I need to be mentally focused here. I can't pay attention to what's going on the other side of the court. Yeah, those mind games, that gamesmanship, that's been going on for a very, very long time. And you know, it's still going on. In fact, back in the day, as we used to say, you know, John McEnroe and even before McEnroe and Borg's time, that was a given that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't talked about like it is today, where it's like, oh, is that fair? Is that good sportsmanship? you know, I just think people need to probably harden up a little bit out there and go, hey, look, these guys are professional athletes. They're big boys.
Yep.
They get paid very well because they're at a level that, you know, that warrants that. And you know what? If you can't beat a guy that's got some tape on the calf muscle and, you know, you don't think it's 100%, well, that's on you. And you know, on that Nadal one, you know, as you said, a great example of the level that those guys are at, their base level, as I spoke about before, was this year when Nadal came to Australia. He said, I'm going to play Brisbane, and he brutalized his first two-round opponents there. And he looked like, gee whiz, he looks like he's in form where, you know, the second week is going to be a given, like a fourth round. That's second week form, no doubt about that. But as we saw, you know, he's playing guys that are ranked, you know, 80, 90, maybe 105 in the world, you know, 2 and 3, 2 and 2 kind of win. Just shows you the level that his base level after not playing competitive tennis for 12 months, he strolls back in and makes mincemeat of a couple of guys before, you know, obviously his body broke down again.
Yeah. Having top 30 base level, because I would say the top 30 players now are all pretty incredible. He just waltzed in with that level of form, and unfortunately the body didn't hold up to it. But
yeah. And that's the other thing too. You talk about the, you know, first come up with when Federer, you know, I think it may have been, he may have got that Wimbledon title, Josh. He was born to be in 37, I think it was, his last one there where he beat Cilic. I don't think he dropped a set.
2017.
Yeah. And you know, Roger, you know, at the French Open that year, I think he went down to Nadal in the semis. He played a great quarter against Wawrinka. Those guys were just unbelievable hitting from the back of the court on a day where it was 30 degrees. The ball was zinging around. Next round against Nadal, he could never get the right weather conditions when he played Nadal at the French, and it was cold. It was 18 degrees. It was blowing a gale, but he never hit the ball better off the ground. And I was like, if he hits the ball this well, come Wimbledon, he's going to win it. And he did. People go, geez, how, you know, at that age, how, you know, is he able to do that? Or Novak now, how is he able to do that? And I'm like, well, because even if they come down slightly from when they were at their peak physical capabilities, their level is a level above those other guys that they're playing week in, week out. So, you know, it's still a scary level.
Well, even if they're, and you and I have spoken about this before, and it's probably the thing that fascinates us so much about the top guys, is even if they don't have the weapons on a particular day, they've seen so much and done so much and pushed each other so much tactically that they've seen everything. They're rarely, if ever, going to lose the tactical battle. Like the only player that in recent memory that seems to have that level of chess brain that some of those top, you know, the big three, for lack of a better term, is Medvedev. Medvedev seems to be able to win games. He has no, like really, he has no right to be winning some of the matches he does. He just outbrains people and he's very tactical.
Yes.
But that's what these young guys, Sinner seems to be developing a good feel, and Alcaraz seems to have every shot imaginable. So he doesn't need to think so much. It's all so natural for him. He can just hit it anywhere he likes, particularly with all the drop shots. But it is about beating their brain as well. So even if Novak, for example, drops off 10% physically, he was never relying on, I mean, besides flattening out his forehand, he could generate a lot of force, but he's never been blowing people away. He would have to have the slowest serve of one of the great players of all time, wouldn't he? Surely. It's like he ratcheted it up under Ivan Isovich to 205.
Yep.
Before that, he was 198, 200 most of the time, which – there's people like Zverev that are knocking it down regularly at 220. So he was never relying on – it was always perfect placement, tactical. So can you see these young guys developing that sort of game?
Well, you know, on the Alcaraz one, the Alcaraz one's really interesting because we saw in Australia this year firsthand when Zverev really picked him apart there. And Alcaraz Zverev played a great level, don't get me wrong, but Alcaraz, when the ball was played between the lines and the ball was in play – he was just all over the mat. You know what I mean? His brain was working overtime way too fast, you know, and he had trouble with shot selection. He had trouble with making good decisions out there. And before you knew it, he was in the locker room and people were stunned. Like, what kind of performance was that? Yeah. It was kind of like he felt like he had to put on a show for the fans out there, you know. And, you know, the talk was, you know, he needs to understand that, don't worry about that. You know what I mean? You need to go out there and do what you need to do to win matches week in, week out. And I think with him, once he finds that out, once he understands that and you know, mentally matures, we've got to understand he's still only 21 years of age, mentally matures, you know, it's going to be scary time for the rest of the tour, whether Novak's out there or he's not. And that's the, you know, I really feel that his ceiling is probably higher than anybody else's.
Yeah.
Sinner, he's already worked that out. He's a little bit older. He's been on tour since he was, you know, full-time on tour since he was, 18 years of age. He's had good solid 4 or 5 years there. Now he's top three in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, knocking on that door of that number one. And, you know, it's been more of a slow burn for Sinner.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, he got in the top 10, he fell out of the top 10, he's tweaked the serve, he's had different coaching teams. Mm. And, he's got that mindset worked out now, and that's where he's reaping the rewards.
One thing I've noticed that's changed in Sinner's game, and it could be coaching or just maturity, is on the biggest points, he thought he had to win them by crushing a massive winner.
Yep.
And now Sinner seems to be choosing better shots and only unleashing the power when he knows that it's a clear winner or I've got to step it up a bit.
Yep. Yep.
Not just every ball has to get the skin knocked off it,
which
is something you and I have spoken about.
Yeah.
He's gotten over that.
Mm.
But there's so many young power hitters, and we seem to gripe about this in our private conversation. They're so gifted, but they only have one mode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep.
But they don't know when to like shift down a gear and just hit big targets.
And the versatility is a big one. We know, Alcaraz, he's got that versatility.
Yeah.
But – you know, it's that shot selection in the biggest moments. You know, he showed that vulnerability, you know, in Australia this year. Worked it out at Indian Wells. Now another setback, his second major injury this year. Well, we don't know if it's major, but he's out again. That's the bottom line. He's not playing this week on the dirt.
Yeah.
But Sinner's found that, found that mode now where, you know, when the ball's in play, he's showing more toughness. He's showing, better shot selection, not trying to crush the cover off the ball, you know, every time. Now, if it's there, he's upgrading to the forehand, he's hitting it. He's hitting the forehand as big as anybody right now. Guys have found that out since the start of the season in January. So, you know, that's what's fascinating. But now, Sinner, onto the clay courts, he's had much better results on the hard courts.
Yeah.
Clay court season is long throughout this, you know, leading up to the French Open, then after the French Open, and then we're back there later on in the year on some European events. So, you know, how does Sinner, you know, handle the week in, week out on the clay, on the dirt? Because as we know, there's a lot of European guys, a lot of South American guys, these Argentinian guys, these are other Italian guys, you know, they're all throughout the draw. You know, there's 9, 10 of them in the top 100 in the world. You're going to have to back up against some guys that love playing on the clay, and they know that, hey, I'm playing Sinner on the clay. I'm at least a chance. We're on a hard court. They're basically going to pick up their check and they're moving on.
Yeah, I don't have enough weapons on hard.
They don't.
And he's going to get run around a lot, even if he ends up beating a lot of these guys. They're not going to be 6-1, 6-2 matches against people in the top 30, which he's had many of recently. It's been unbelievable on hard courts.
Mm.
He's beating them. Like, they may as well not have played some of these matches. He's winning them so easy.
Yeah.
They're not going to be that easy.
No, exactly right. Yeah. And you look at some of the score lines and some of the how long some of these matches go, two and a half, 3 hour matches, at 250 level. There was a little 3 250s last week. Look at some of the match times. You take one of those 3 hour matches where it's 7-6 in the third, 7-5 in the third, you're in a bit of trouble because you got to back up against, come a quarter, come a semi, against an Etchberry or, someone like a Batista or a Goot or something like that. It catches up with you. So that's what's where Sinner's been so impressive, Josh.
He's never an easy win.
No, that's right. And that's where Sinner's been so impressive. Early rounds, just blasting guys away. So
Preserving energy. Yeah.
So come the back end, you've got those petrol tickets. Oh, we just saw it with Dimitrov there, who was super impressive there in Miami where he blew Alcaraz away. But the semifinal against Zverev, might have been 7-5 in the third, something like that. Almost 3 hours. Yeah. Come the final against Sinner, it was only, the stopwatch was out.
Yeah.
I mean, he was done.
Yeah. So just a couple of things. We want to cover off on these 250 events because that's where we're sitting time-wise.
Yep.
And there was a few people that had a bit of a return to form through that. I also want to talk to you about Zverev quickly first. He made an interesting comment in the media this week, and it might be because he's had issues off the court and people feel more open to just ask him things regardless of context now, but it was inferred by the person that was talking to him that he has been underachieving for a fairly long time. And his response to that was, oh, I'm pretty happy with number five in the world. Don't quote me on what he's exactly what he said. He's like, I think that's a pretty impressive result, considering some of the people that are above him. One person that's above him is arguably the GOAT, but he's got the two great young players of a generation.
Yeah.
And Alcaraz might be as good as anyone ever by the time he's done if he can stay healthy.
Yep.
So how do you feel about Zverev? Because I think considering the injury that he came back from and the strength of the top 20, and there's more players that are difficult to play, even if they're maybe they're not better.
Mm-hmm.
There's more strange matches that Zverev's coming out on top in some of these strange matches against awkward players.
Yep.
That even before he was hurt, sometimes he'd just lose a game like that.
Yeah.
You know, like a Bublik or someone like that that's got a very sophisticated, weird kind of game. Sometimes Zverev was losing those games. Now he's winning them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's just losing still to the top, top, top guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's your feeling on him in 2024?
Oh, I think he's done a great job to get back to where he's gotten to, you know. People need to understand that match where he did the ankle there in the semis at the French Open had Nadal in real trouble, had him in real trouble. And as we know, not many have had Nadal in real trouble or on the ropes there at the French Open, you know, since he first, you know, set foot there in Paris. So it was devastating, you know, for the big guy, because that was going to be, you know, an incredible win if he was able to pull that one out. You know, it would have been huge for his legacy to say, you know, I beat Nadal. Technically, when he was still in his clay court prime there, you know, on the court that he's basically owned since he set foot there. So, you know, huge setback. And you could see when he came back from the surgery, you know, he was really, especially on the hard courts, was really on open stance forehands, really nervous to put the foot down. You know, he came to Australia and anything out wide to the forehand, you could see the mental demons that he was battling. Guys were like, well, I'm just going to put him out there into that open stance forehand and see how he handled it. And
yeah,
he wasn't able to handle it very well. So, you know, he lost matches because he was basically 12 to 18 months away of just building up that confidence again, you know, to move and, you know, to get through matches and back up and then rehabilitation. It's a real mental grind. So the question marks were, will he ever get back to where he was, you know, into that top three, top four area and competing for the biggest events? You know, I definitely had my doubts, and a lot of other, you know, fans and media experts out there had their doubts as well. He's put a run together now where you can see that he's back to that level where it's only the very best that that he's going down to. There's not many bad losses on the resume for Zverev, especially since January, probably building from October, November of last year. So it's great to see, because, you know, and he's one of those guys that probably just as competent on the clay courts, Josh, as he is on the hard courts.
I've never not that I can remember, and it might be just because of how beautiful and how solid his backhand is, but I've never seen anyone at that size that can negotiate the clay that well in my time watching tennis.
Yep.
He looks just as comfortable on that surface.
Yep. The two-hand backhand is flawless. It really is.
Yeah. Defensive and offensive, if he wants it to be.
Yeah. The forehand has been the wing that's been a little bit susceptible over, you know, his career, where players sort of go there on the bigger points, and, you know, it can break down and he can shank some balls at times. But you know, he's been able to tighten that up, and he's starting to, you know, January was huge for him, where he won some huge matches where he showed tremendous fight, where before it was like, you know, take it or leave it. So I think there's some belief there, and he's definitely a threat. Come Paris, watch him leading into the French Open.
Yeah.
You know, grass, probably not so much, you know, but way he serves, as you said, 220, 230, you know, he can do damage on the grass as well.
No one in the top 10 has as big a serve as
him. Yeah, he can do damage on the grass as well. Yeah. We know he had those problems with the second serve there a couple of seasons ago. He seems to have overcome that.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that sort of creep back in. So it's great to see. And going into these big matches against the Sinners and the Medvedevs on the hard courts and those kind of matches, he's right there. He's right there. They don't want to face him, because
if you were to ask any player,
they don't want to see him.
Do you want to see Zverev in the next round?
Yeah, no.
Not really. I don't want to be hitting back 200 kilometer an hour serves for 5 hours.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Yeah. No one wants that.
Absolutely. And over the the three set format as well.
Yeah,
we've seen like he's won two ATP
won a gold medal,
end of year titles, a gold medal. He's as dangerous as anybody over the short format. Come the slams, the question mark's been
one
there.
One thing I have, and it just speaks to how well he's recovered and he's pushed himself to recover, is his resilience. Because I remember the ATP Tour Finals, it might have been 2018. He got really seriously touched up by Novak in the round robin matches, and then he ended up beating him in the final. And that was when Novak had re-entered his like god mode.
Yeah.
Just the start of that ascendancy back to number – well, he already was number one, I think, but he was about to go on this epic run of slams. And Zverev, within the space of a couple of matches, had a mindset change and actually kind of swung it back the other way, and he was almost unhittable.
Yeah.
So I think number five is – like you think about a lot of other number fives, sometimes you can't even name who it was.
Yeah.
Everyone knows him.
Yeah, that's
right. No one wants to play him.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're – you know, someone who might struggle to return those bigger serves.
Yeah. Yep. And you look when he brings his best, it's an awesome package.
Yeah.
You know, he stands 6'6", he's got long levers, that two-hand backhand. It's
I think his movement might be underrated too, just because Medvedev exists.
Of course it's underrated.
He makes everyone else at that size look like they can't move, but he's probably the second best mover that's that big.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to move like he can on the clay at 6'6". Now, he grew up on the clay courts over there.
That helps.
Yeah, that certainly helps. But, you know, obviously when you're that height, all you're really known for really when you're getting into that 6'6", 6'7", is a serve and a forehand really. That's how I win my matches. But he does everything well, man. And he volleys well. He comes forward. He's not afraid to come in. Yeah, man, he's right there, man. And, you know, he's one to, you know, he's knocking on the door.
Yeah, exactly. So these 250 events that we spoke about, did you want to just give us a quick run? Because they're super fascinating. Well, not only who won them, but just it signaled a bit of a return to form for a few people.
Yeah, they are. The 250 events, man, they're tough. You know, you get three of these events generally each week when there's not a 500 on, and then the rest of the guys are out there playing challenges, playing in the smaller events. But, you know, the Houston event, it hasn't been the strongest over the journey, since it came onto the tour. You know, littered with American guys, they tend to just, you know, stay at home and, your Sheltons, Tommy Pauls, Taylor Fritz, these kind of guys play that. So there's a lot of Americans in the draw. A lot of the Aussie guys went over there and played there as well because they're generally over there playing some challenger events in that sort of Mexico, USA area. And, hey, the Houston event, Ben Shelton, you know, Benny Shelton took out the title, the lefty. He's up now top 15 in the world. Look, a good result, I thought, for him on the clay court, his first clay court title. He won the 500 in Tokyo. It might have been last year, I think, Josh. That was his first one there.
Yeah.
Just served huge over there and, on a hard court.
Yeah.
But for him to win, you know, on the clay, the 250, took out Francis Tiafoe in the final. You know, good. Good for his profile in the States. You know, he's working his way up there now. And, you know, he's one that has made a semi of a US Open and took your man. If all the listeners out there haven't realized yet, but Josh, he's a big Novak guy.
Yeah.
Djokovic guy.
Yeah.
But it took your guy to.
Well, all my other guys.
Yeah.
Which were, Nadal, but he's obviously, I'm not giving up on him, but Nishikori and Stan Wawrinka are well and truly at the end of their careers. So,
yeah.
And it's been a while since Agassi and Sampras have been on the court.
Yeah, that's right. So you took Novak to take him down, you know. So, you know, Shelton's right there. It'd be interesting to see how he's able to perform the bigger events on the clay. You know, the 250 event, he may have been the top seed there.
Yeah.
You know, he was able to roll through. I think there was a couple of good wins there against some guys from Argentina. But, you know, at the end of the day, he got the job done, and that's what he was there to do. And as I said, once he gets into the – you know, the Madrid, he's not playing this week in Monte Carlo because of the travel from Houston to he couldn't get there in time. So he's just taking off this week and then he'll be back in action the following week. So I'm curious to see how he fares come the bigger events, the 1,000 events over there in Europe. If you can make a quarter or a semi and if you're doing that, you know what? That's super impressive.
And out of that American cluster of players, who is it do you think can generate the most kind of topspin when they need to? Like, who can actually vary their topspin the most out of those young guys that maybe can give them a bit more variance on the clay?
Probably probably Francis, I would say, Tiafo with the forehand.
Yeah.
He can rip it with head.
That's who I was probably thinking.
Yeah, yep. He's the athlete that you need. Then it comes down to desire. You know what I mean? How much do you want to play defense? How much do you want to chase? How much do you want to grind?
It's particularly with someone like Francis, who's such a supreme athlete. It's not like people would say, oh, why don't more people play like Rafa does on clay? Well, Novak's the next best clay player,
yeah,
and he doesn't even play like Rafa does.
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
generating that amount of shape on the ball every single point playing on clay,
yeah,
it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Like only one person ever has been able to do that point in, point out.
That's right. and you know, and he's you know, he's shown that, you know, Nadal's shown that point in, point out, you know, he plays every point like he has no money in the bank.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it's like
I'm gonna lose an arm here if I have to.
Like he's broke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that pisses guys off when you're playing against that kind of player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
that's, when's he gonna give up?
Yeah. That's when you say to yourself, do I really want to be out here against this guy? You know what I mean? Or do I wanna, you know, go see the sights, you know what I mean, on the French Riviera. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know what I mean? How bad do you want it?
Yeah.
You know, quickly, a guy, you know, this week just lost a couple of days ago, Sebastian Korda. I've been big raps on this guy. Mm. He's, you know, he's safely inside the top 30. I think we saw some of his ability come the Australian Open when, you know, he dismantled Medvedev in round three. I think it was last year, I believe it was.
2023.
Yeah, hasn't been able to consistently show that level. You know what I mean? So he finds himself, you know, not in the top 10, barely in the top 20. Loses early on at you know, in Monte Carlo to I think it was Sinner, bad, was 1-2, something like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It just shows you that, you know, hits a very flat ball, timing. He's had injury problems as well. You know what I mean? So trying to figure it out. You know, he's 23, 24. He's won, his top level is very, very good, very, very high. Could even possibly win a slam. But, you know, you've got to maintain that. And he's one that is vulnerable on the clay courts, as we just seen.
Yeah. So we had the Houston. Which is
yep.
on clay.
Yep, we had Berrettini was back. Yeah, Matteo Berrettini. Yeah, it was back. It was one there, Josh, where it was like, will he make it back? All of a sudden, he's outside the top 100. We haven't seen him for quite a while, playing challenges.
I think he lost a challenger final a few weeks ago.
Yeah, lost a challenger final, pulled out of another challenger because of injury, and you think, oh, gee whiz, is he going to make it back? Two, does he have the desire to make it back? Because as we know, once you know you're in the top 10, you're upper echelon of the game, and next thing you know, you're back at 150 in the world because of injury or lack of form. Normally, because of injury when you're at that level, and you've got to ask yourself a few questions. You know, life's pretty good when you know you've got quite a few. You know, your bank balance is looking nice.
Yeah.
So he's done a great job, and you know, and coming into Marrakesh there, the 250, probably don't expect him to win the title. You know what I mean? You've got some good players in there, some good clay quarters in there.
Yep.
His match count hasn't been high. Could he get through five matches? Well, he did. He took out the title and beat some good players there. So he's back in the top 100.
Yeah, I saw that he jumped 50 spots in a week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets to 250 points. You know, he's back up, automatically qualifies for the French Open, which is great. And we're good to see him back. Obviously, the problem's going to be moving forward. Is the body? How does the body hold up? Because he's been one that is a power athlete, big man, about 6'5". You know, you're talking probably a little over 100 kilograms. Yeah, so
he's a unit.
He is, and he's a great athlete. He's a power athlete, huge serve, huge forehand. But that body, you know what I mean? It's he's had some like soft tissue injuries and you know some arm injuries as well.
I watched some of the highlights and a few of his matches just a bit more in full over the last couple of days because I've always liked him. But I always thought he was a player whose game was very grass-centric.
Yep.
Like, where's he going to potentially win one? It'll be – well, I think he has won some Masters-level events on grass. I think he won one leading into the Wimbledon 2021.
Yep. You got that Queen's title. He might have a couple of those Queen's titles.
Yeah. So very accomplished at the highest level on grass.
Yep.
That was the year 2021. So I'm pretty sure was the year when he made the final against Novak.
Yep.
So, and that was at Wimbledon. Sorry for those who aren't following along. So I didn't actually really ever pick him as someone that would transition to clay because it seems like the people are either clay experts or they're everything.
Yep.
you know, you're all surface players or they're clay-centric players, but he just kind of had a real thing on the grass because of his power, I think, and just the way he hits the ball suited grass.
That's right. And
he's won one on clay, so he's clearly got some variation in his game now.
Yeah, and you get a guy like Berrettini who, obviously being Italian, clay courts everywhere over there in Europe and Italy, so he spent all his time growing up on that surface. But when you're talking about that size of athlete, you know, 6'5", you know, getting up towards the high 90s to probably 100 kilograms, maybe even a little bit heavier than that, you know, you've got to change direction on those clay courts, the sliding, you know, the backing up, the playing defense. You know, we know he's not a defensive stalwart. He's an attacking strike first kind of player. You know, his game just translates to the grass courts where he can smack the serve down and smack a forehand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That style of play, that serve plus one style of play. Yeah. He's got a good slice backhand, so he gets good purchase on the grass.
Yeah.
And he's just been able to, one, he never grew up on the grass, but his game translated very well. More so, we know there's not many events on the grass on the main ATP tour, but, you know, when it rolls around, he has very, very good results there winning titles where he probably prefers it on the green stuff than the clay courts. So, you know, for him to win the 250, as we said, those 250s spread out over the whole week where, you know, obviously the draw's not as stacked as a Masters 1000 where you've got all the best players playing.
Yeah.
You know, he still had to beat some quality players there, and he still had to do something that he hasn't done in a while, and that's play 5 matches at ATP Tour level to win the title. So he's got to be confident.
There was no gimmies.
No.
In there at all.
No.
Yeah, they were
quality
opponents every single round.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. So great to see that there. And the last one, you know, probably a guy that, you know, we don't talk about in terms of, you know, his clay court exploits, and that was in Estoril, the 250 there, and that was Hubie Hurkacz.
Yeah.
He took out the title there, and as again, I'm curious to see if he's able to take that now into, you know, the Masters events and make a semi or a final.
Yep.
250 event for someone like Hurkacz, he's probably expected to win that when he rolls in there.
Yeah.
And he'd be of the mindset like, I can win this title. Novak's not playing. You know, Sinner's not here. You know, so these guys go into these events and go, hey, here's my chance. You know, he's one that great defensive skills, amazing athlete for his size. He's got the long levers, the two-hand backhand, rock solid. The forehand gets a little bit, like Zverev, similar.
Yeah.
The forehand goes missing and players know that. But just a huge serve.
Absolute
bomb, Josh. It's a cannon. It's a cannon, man. It really is. And
would you say he has the biggest serve in tennis at the moment? Maybe not on the regular.
Yeah.
I know Novak said during a tournament early in the year, I might have meant late last year, it's almost unhittable.
Yeah. I think it's a shot that doesn't get spoken about.
Because growing up, if you had – I mean, he's bigger server than anyone I saw growing up. Maybe even Isovich might have been in that territory.
Yeah.
But I would say on average – Hurkacz is probably even bigger because he's hitting it from more height.
Yeah.
I think he'd be 6'6", is he?
Yeah, he's in that ballpark again. Yeah,
he's just come and it's just bouncing so far. Like you can see some of the serve returns, like when they take pictures of them, the people are leaping off the ground to get up to it.
Yeah.
Like it's a massive, massive thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess maybe the way we talk about the sport's moved on from that. But if you've got that weapon, you've got the weapon still.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, and look, to say it certainly helps is, you know, massive, massive understatement, you know. And it doesn't get spoken about enough with Hurkacz, that's for sure.
Because he's not burning energy on his service games.
No.
Much at all.
No. And his results, you know, it's been really hardcourt based. You know, I think he got a Masters 1000 there in the States there a couple of seasons ago, I think. I think it may have been Indian Wells, which was probably his first really big tour title win. When you talk, you know, they don't get any bigger than that than the slams. You know, maybe a semi at Wimbledon. He took out Roger, you know, when Roger was wrapping things up there in a quarter, all based around the serve.
Yeah.
He's one that, you know, on the grass, if that serves on, you know, he's semis, he's could be final bound. And it takes the very best guys to, you know, like your Novaks and Sinners right now to take that guy out. He's one that you don't want to see. He's a real handful. Great athlete and, you know, can play the offensive style, likes to play the defensive style, but with that serve, you know, if that forehand is able to hold up, which is always the question, you know, he's right there. He's a top tenner for sure.
Righto. Well, thank you, Kalfman. There'll be a link to wherever you're listening to this that you can get some more of the show moving forward. If you like it, share it with someone that you know that is a lover of tennis and might want some slightly different conversations that hopefully sit a little bit outside the mainstream, because we did have a few moments today where we said, oh, we don't want to go too into it, but that's exactly what we're going to do. We actually are going to go a bit deeper into these conversations and move beyond the headlines. Righto, mate. Well, thank you very much.
Josho, we'll see you on the next episode.
Yes.